Eventually, total silence fell in the secret heart of the ship. Jason unconsciously held his breath, sensing the TIE fighter pilots and his crewmates in Jade Shadow doing the same. This was the moment that would determine whether the mission failed or succeeded. If the Yuuzhan Vong didn't believe the ship to be truly dead, then they certainly soon would be. To the rest of the universe, the Braxent Bone Crusher looked as though it had spent its fighters in a failed attack and been taken out itself. Everything depended on this illusion remaining intact. Jason had only two holocams on the hull transmitting data back to him. He kept his eyes on the views, one above the breach in the dreadnought's back, the other from the stern, looking along the ship. It was Mara who finally broke the silence.
"Anything, Jason?"
She spoke in barely a whisper. "Nothing conclusive yet," he returned, equally as quietly.
"This one is convinced by the quiet," Saba said.
Jason listened. It was impossible to hear through a vacuum, so what the Yuuzhan Vong were doing would be impossible to detect orally. But there was a quality to the silence that suggested Saba was right. The Yuuzhan Vong had called off the attack.
"Okay," he said. "Everyone take your positions. I'll click you when I have something definite."
He picked up a slight electromagnetic hum as the yacht's airlock cycled through, but he doubted anyone outside the ship would notice. A shadow moved across the screens in front of him. He stiffened, even though he knew what to expect. Braxent Bone Crusher's slow roll around its center of gravity brought the slave ship gradually back into view a minute later, and sure enough, it was looming much larger than before. Jason clicked once to confirm that everything was going to plan. A second later, a powerful jolt ran through the dreadnought. For a second, he thought that that one, almost imperceptible click might have given them away, until he realized that what he'd in fact felt was the doven basal of the slave ship grabbing onto Bone Crusher. "Everything's going according to plan," said Mara. His aunt had sent out a bubble of both encouragement and reassurance to everyone on board. Another jolt followed, accompanied by the sound of twisting metal. When everything settled down again, the stars were no longer moving as fast, and the slave ship was rotating too, anchored to the hull of Bone Crusher by the Yuuzhan Vong's version of artificial gravity. It was coming at them, tentacles first, like something out of a nightmare. He clicked again, this time speaking into the comm. "They've got us," he said, "and our friendly slave ship is moving in fast."
"Any sign of the ships?" Mara asked.
"I think it's safe to assume that most of them have gone back to their capital vessels," he answered. "They seem to have left just enough to..." A voice over the comm link cut him off.
"This is Commander Bishith Vorik,"
said an abrasive Yuuzhan Vong voice.
"All infidels will surrender immediately or be destroyed."
Jason's heart sank. The commander knew they were there. The plan had failed. It had all been for nothing.
"Wait, Jason," Mara sent, sensing the despair welling up inside of him.
"We have no intention of surrendering to become slaves,"
came another voice over the receiver. The growled words came from Grand Admiral Galad Pellion. Jason almost laughed out loud in relief. The Yuuzhan Vong's ultimatum had been addressed to the Imperials, not Braxent Bone Crusher at all.
"Surrender the Jedi you harbor among you,"
Vorik continued.
"Why should we turn on those who help us?"
Pellion replied.
"What good is the help if it results in your destruction?"
Vorik responded.
"You attacked us without provocation,"
Pellion shot back.
"It would seem our destruction was always your intention." "The presence of the Jedi is provocation enough,"
Vorik growled.
"Your resistance is provocation. Your very existence is provocation. Now, power down your weapons, infidel, and surrender."
"I have a better idea,"
Pellion said evenly.
"Leave the system now, while you're still in a position to do so."
The Yuuzhan Vong commander's laugh boomed out from the receivers.
If you were counting on the cowardly attack to our rear flanks to change the course of this battle, then you should know that it has failed. Your survival now, fool, rests solely upon my goodwill.
Grand Admiral Pelion hesitated just long enough to give the impression that this news had rattled him.
I don't think there's an atom of goodwill in the entire Yuuzhan Vong culture.
We would sooner die than submit to you, Varric. Then so be it,
Varric said, laughing again.
And may Yum Yamka devour your bodies as well as your souls.
When the mouth of one of the slave ship's surviving tentacles came groping for her, Saba Sebatine almost felt her courage desert her. Pelion's minions had appropriated a number of cadavers from the nearest Star Destroyer's morgue and scattered them around the intended blast hole. The tentacles didn't waste time with the bodies, though, passing over the dead tissue to continue searching for something more useful. They poked deeper into the punctured hull, looking for anything alive. Anything at all. Danny blanched behind her faceplate as one fumbled blindly closer, but she didn't back away. Nor did Saba. Putting her faith in the Force, as well as her pressurized jumpsuit, she pushed out gently from her hiding place in the direction of one of the tentacles. With surprising speed, the tentacle noticed her and swung around to take her.
"For this one's home," she whispered. "For this one's people."
She forced her muscles to relax as she was engulfed by the maw of the tentacle and swept along a slippery ribbed tube toward the hold of the ship. The contractions around her grew stronger as she approached the end of the tentacle. She wondered briefly if Danny was following, but didn't have time to check. She was too caught up in the moment and what she was experiencing to sense anyone else. Then, abruptly, the ride was over, and she was spat into what felt like a thick mass of jelly. She gasped for air and felt a pain in her ribs. Nothing seemed to be broken, but she was definitely bruised. All around her was a uniform infrared glow, unfortunately too diffuse or muffled to see by. Her fingers sought purchase, but they kept slipping in the jelly. Then, something scrabbled at her faceplate, making her jerk backward. Her hands found the torch in her equipment pack and snapped it on. Just enough light came through the jelly to reveal that something leathery and star-shaped was trying to force its way across her face. She firmly brushed it aside and suddenly came face to face with a human. She gasped with shock, then cursed herself. Of course. She was in a slave ship. What did she expect? The goop around her was probably a softer version of Blorash jelly, used in combat to pin an opponent's limbs down. The thing flapping at her face might have been a Nulith, living breath masks for Yuuzhan Vong's pilots. The human floating upside down in front of her, just one of thousands trapped in the jelly, didn't have a Nulith and was, as her questioning hands determined, quite dead. A pressure wave rolled through the jelly from above her, and Saba assumed that Danny had just arrived. She moved her powerful legs and arms to propel herself forward, attempting to swim for the outer shell of the belly, but it was impossible to tell if she was making any progress. It was like trying to swim through a sap pool while blindfolded. She tried climbing instead of swimming, using the people around her for leverage. They all seemed to be in a state of drug-induced unconsciousness, and as such, didn't respond when she grabbed hold of them. The edge gradually came closer, and she found herself reaching for it well before it arrived. When she finally hit the edge of the belly, she clutched tightly at it, allowing herself the time to regain her strength. The interior surface was ribbed, so movement along it wouldn't be difficult once she got going again. Something clutched at her from out of the jelly. She pushed herself between a couple of the immense ribs, kicking out at what she thought to be another Nulith. But it came back, groping insistently for her. She reached automatically for her lightsaber, even though she knew that lighting it would inevitably hurt the unconscious captives pressing in around her. Then a light appeared out of the reddish murk. It grew brighter as whatever was grabbing at her found purchase and pulled. Saba realized with a flood of relief that the thing that had taken hold of her equipment belt was a human hand, and that the hand belonged to Danny Kui. The barbel couldn't help it. She laughed at herself, amused by her mistake, and buoyed by the fading of her intense but fleeting panic.
Saba, are you all right?
Danny's voice was muffled by the thickness of their masks.
You're shaking.
This one is very glad to see you, Danny Kui,
she said, forcing herself to be calm. Given their situation, uncontrolled laughter could be just as detrimental as panic.
How did you know where to look?
Through the Force, Danny said. Can't you see me that way?
Saba shook her head.
There are too many people in here with us. I am drowning in their minds.
Danny removed her faceplate from Saba's and looked around. It was her turn to shiver.
It's dark in here,
she said upon turning back to face Saba.
Do you know where we are?
Saba concentrated again.
We're past the halfway point, she said. There is a bulge that I suspect contains the ship's control centers. It's not far from here, about 100 meters or so.
Point me in the right direction, then, and let's go,
Danny said with determination, although it obviously came with some effort. Saba led the way, propelling herself along the wall by digging her claws into the ribbing and pulling herself forward. Danny followed, using Saba's tail as a guide. When they reached the bulge, its dimensions became clearer. The bulge was shaped like a volcano, with a round lip surrounding a slight dimple at the top. Feeling her way to the dimple, she was disappointed to find that it wasn't an exit as she had imagined. It was, in fact, an entrance, but not one she could fit through. Danny reached awkwardly for her pack and slid a fat cylinder from it. Saba helped her unscrew its cap and clear away the jelly long enough to activate its contents. 6 modified Mark 7 scarab droids came to life at the touch of a switch on Danny's remote controller. Each had 6 legs, as long as a human's index finger, and 2 retractable injection fangs. They had high-gain photoreceptors and sensitive biodetectors that had been tuned to Yuuzhan Vong rhythms and pheromones. Heads-up displays in Danny's face mask allowed her to see what the scarab saw. As she keyed a series of instructions into the tiny droids and sent them scuttling for the Nulith vent, Saba accessed the information and watched too. The droid soon found the vent and burrowed into its muscular sphincter. The moment the lead scarab began to detect light, it slowed its crawl through the vent. They had clearly reached the end of the narrow passage. The scarab didn't detect any nearby Yuuzhan Vong biorhythms, so the droid slipped free of the vent and found a promising passage through the bony wall, leaving its siblings behind. The view became nothing more than a series of close-ups of unpolished Yorick coral at very close quarters, as the scarab scurried along the narrow fissure. Eventually it came to a dead end, then backtracked until it reached a turnoff it had ignored before, and took that instead. That, too, led to a dead end, so the droid went back to another turning and tried that instead.
Got him,
Danny said suddenly, her voice low but excited. Saba snapped from her pessimism.
Where? Scarab 4.
Saba selected the view and watched biorhythm readings glowing in many colors across a view of yet another narrow fissure. The scarab was moving stealthily closer to the end of the fissure, visible just around the turn up ahead. Bright light shone from around the corner, and Saba could hear the harsh sound of the Yuuzhan Vong language in her earplugs. The scarab instinctively froze the moment it managed to get one of its photoreceptors around the corner for a look, finding itself at about shoulder height in a small control room containing 2 Yuuzhan Vong warriors.
I'm going to send the other scarabs in to join 4, Danny said. We'll get them to attack once they're all there, okay?
Saba nodded.
Only 2 pilots for a ship this big?
she asked dubiously. Danny shrugged in the jelly.
We're not picking up any other readings.
Saba nodded again, more reassured. One by one, the scarab viewpoints began to overlap again. They crowded together in the crack Scarab 4 had found, making tiny clicking noises with their thin metal legs as they watched the aliens going about their business.
How far can these things jump?
Saba asked.
I'm not sure, Danny replied. They have their own attack algorithms. I'd probably just get in the way if I told them what to do.
And you're sure the poison will work?
A range of anti-Yuuzhan Vong toxins had been identified by Master Silgal. Pelion had instructed his security staff to fill the Scarab's poison reservoirs with it before they left.
No, but we'll soon find out.
She keyed a new series of instructions for the Scarabs, and immediately, four of them detached their monolinks and scurried from the hole. The fifth and sixth moved forward to report what happened. Saba held herself still, despite every muscle yearning to strike and strike fast. For the time they scurried across the wall, the four hand-sized assassin droids remained invisible to them. Then Saba noticed one appear at the top of the display, cautiously creeping across the ceiling. A second one appeared to the right, a third to the left, slinking along the floor like a sinister insect. The fourth was still out of sight, and Saba found herself leaning slightly, as if this would somehow afford her a better view. The Yuuzhan Vong were still deep in conversation, totally oblivious to the Scarabs making their way toward them. The scruffier of the pair leaned forward to adjust the trim, causing the Scarabs on either side to momentarily freeze in their tracks. The one on the ceiling, however, kept moving, giving cause for Saba to hold her breath in nervous anticipation. She watched as the Scarab crept forward another body's length until it was positioned directly above the other alien. Then, turning 90 degrees and angling its head downward, it released its grip from the ceiling. The Yuuzhan Vong howled in pain and surprise as the metal fangs of the Scarab sank deep into his arm. He stood abruptly, snatching the tiny droid from his arm and smashing it viciously against the wall. The second warrior stood also, looking to see what the commotion from his comrade was all about. As he did, one of the other Scarabs launched itself at him, taking him under the armpit, where the Von Doon crab armor was traditionally weakest. But the fangs didn't dig deep enough for the poison to be effective, and the Scarab was instantly swept aside. The Yuuzhan Vong reached into their armor for weapons. One had only a kufi, but the other had an amphistaff that stirred and spat viciously in his hands. The second Scarab droid tried another leap at the one it had attacked, but was easily batted out of the air by the warrior, and this time was destroyed. The third and fourth Scarabs quickly joined the fray, one crawling up the uninjured Yuuzhan Vong's leg and trying to plant its fangs into his thigh, the other leaping for his face. The confined space barely seemed able to contain the sudden noise and movement as the amphistaff whirled and Scarab fragments smashed against the walls. Danny bit her lip as she ordered in the fifth assassin droid. It jumped on the back of the unbitten warrior, managing to get a decent purchase. Finding a gap in the Von Doon crab armor, it emptied its reservoirs directly into the Yuuzhan Vong's bloodstream. He shouted in alarm as his partner disposed of it with a single precise slash of his kufi. The strong, slender needles, however, remained embedded in the warrior's flesh. With seemingly little effort or discomfort, he twisted around and yanked them out.
The poison isn't working!
There was a nervous panic in Danny's voice.
Rawr!
The Yuuzhan Vong spat, throwing the needles aside. The other struck the biological console in front of him and shouted more angry words in their own tongue. Alarms began to wail as one of the warrior's hands went into the control sacks. The droids had failed, and the alarm had gone out. Reinforcements would no doubt arrive soon. Saba's heart lurched into her throat as she felt a shudder roll through the ship and realized that the slave ship's drives had just fired at full thrust.
She gripped the flesh of the wall impotently, as the crush of bodies seemed to tighten around her. Saba's comlink clicked at the same time Danny said,
"Wait, Saba. Look!"
Through the remaining scarab senses, Saba saw one of the Yuuzhan Vong warriors at the controls of the slave ship slip to his knees, then slowly slump over to one side. The second was having troubles of his own. Going to the aid of his fallen comrade, he lost his balance and fell forward, striking his head on the control console. He regained his footing just long enough to stand up again, then he too went down in a heap.
The poison worked!
Danny's words were carried on a barely suppressed and incredulous laugh of relief. The Barrible drew her lightsaber at the same time she opened a comm channel. There seemed no point maintaining a communications blackout any longer.
"Jason, this is Saba,"
she said urgently.
"Our cover has been blown. Please acknowledge."
"I hear you, Hisser," he said. "And we already guessed as much. We have contacts closing in across the board, moving in to pick you up right now. Are you able to get out okay?"
"Jason, empty the flight deck,"
Saba said hurriedly.
"Keep Jade Shadow in dock and tell Mara to have the tractor beam ready."
Danny's eyes grew wide in the reddish darkness.
"Saba, you're not.
We truly have no other choice,"
Saba shot back sharply.
"Now hang on to something."
Saba pressed the business end of her lightsaber flat against the fleshy wall of the slave ship interior. The sound it made on ignition was horrific as it boiled through flesh to the vacuum outside. The ship quivered as she dragged the blade along the wall, turning a hole into a slit 1 meter long, then 2 meters. A great bulge developed as muscles pushed in from all sides, resisting the pressure differential by fighting to keep the lips of the hole together. When the rent in the belly wall reached 5 meters, Saba felt the muscle tremble and give way. The slit peeled open, emptying the contents of the slave ship out into the vacuum in one thick stream.
"Saba, what are you doing?"
The exclamation came from Mara.
"Those people are going to freeze to death out here."
"No, they won't,"
Saba replied, fighting the current that was trying to pull her through the gap also. The people, bumping into her as they were sucked through the hole, only made her task that much harder.
"The insulation from the Blorash jelly should hold for several minutes, long enough for you to get them into the flight deck."
"And what are they supposed to do for oxygen in the meantime?"
"The Nooliths, of course."
"Saba, the Nooliths won't work in a vacuum."
"They won't be in a vacuum. They'll be in the Blorash jelly, which is where they've been getting the oxygen in the first place."
Mara chuckled nervously.
"This is a crazy idea. One only a Barrible would attempt."
Saba hissed softly to herself, taking Mara's words as the compliment they were intended to be. With both hands on the pommel of the lightsaber, she widened the hole as far as she dared. Too much would send the slaves spraying across the sky in an arc too wide for Mara to catch them all. But too small a hole would mean the slave ship wouldn't empty fast enough, giving the Yuuzhan Vong reinforcements time to arrive.
"Time to get out of here,"
Saba told Danny, wrapping around the woman's shoulders an arm that was almost as long as Danny was tall. Clutching Danny close to her chest, she let go and was instantly swept up by the current and sucked unceremoniously out into space. Limbs from the other captives continued to batter her as they flew out, so she tucked herself around Danny to protect her. Then, the slight acceleration she had felt through the slave ship was gone, and she was spinning in space. Two living people in a clump of about 40 held together by the Blorash jelly. The stuff stiffened around her as though setting, keeping the pressure in.
"We're out,"
she said shortly.
"Keep talking,"
Jason said.
"It'll give us a trace."
"No, get others."
But that was all Saba could manage. Trapped and with little else to do but wait, She stared out through the translucent jelly at the galaxy spinning idly around her, wondering if this would be the last thing she ever saw.
Beautiful.
Danny ground through a clenched jaw, her eyes fixed on the view of the massive globules of solidifying jelly drifting nearby. The reddish spheres were glittering in the sunlight, spinning around them in a lengthening spiral, with its starting point in the side of the rapidly deflating slave ship. Saba didn't have the breath or the energy to comment. All she could do was stare and morbidly wonder what would happen to them when the jelly set completely. But the thought was broken when the bubble that contained them jerked suddenly, bringing their gentle roll to a complete and abrupt halt. A sense of falling swept over her, and with immense relief, Saba realized they had been picked up by Jade Shadow's tractor beam. Their bubble, along with a dozen or so others, was slowly being drawn down into the hold of Bone Crusher.
Got you,
Jason said. There was no hiding his relief.
Are you two okay in there?
I'm here,
Danny said with effort.
Not sure about Saba.
Danny seemed to be coping with the solidification of the jelly better than Saba was. Maybe, Saba thought, as the tightening across her chest worsened, it had something to do with the smaller lung capacity of humans. A barrable would find it much harder to breathe in higher pressure, since it took more energy to inflate the larger ribcage. This was disrupted when another rough jolt sent them tumbling end over end. Saba thought she could hear Jason talking, but he sounded far off and vague. Flashes of light coincided with a faint and distant tapping sound, and she knew instinctively that Braxton Bonecrusher was taking hits to its reactivated shields. She should have felt relief that she had been rescued, but all she could think of was the other people in the Blorash jelly. A thrill of fear rushed through her when the flashing abruptly intensified. Surely the Yuuzhan Vong couldn't be that close. But no, she thought numbly. These flashes were from laser light, not plasma. With some effort, her eyes flickered open, and she looked around to see what was going on. Her ears detected a faint sizzling, crackling sound that gradually grew louder. The mass of jelly shook violently. She felt the pressure across her body ease slightly, and then a few seconds later, ease some more. Saba opened her eyes and the world flooded back in. Between flashes of automatic cutting lasers and robot manipulators grabbing at her, she heard droid brains announcing that the release had been achieved with optimal efficiency, while TIE fighters reported on the defense of the dreadnought. And there was Jason standing above her, tearing chunks of jelly from Danny's jumpsuit, then helping Saba do the same. She was on a landing deck. More than 50 rough spheres of solidified jelly filled the confined space almost to its limit. From the spheres protruded arms and legs, along with the occasional head of the unconscious human captives. Cutting lasers were beginning to work on several of the spheres, releasing the people so they could be treated. Saba laughed out loud as Jason and Danny helped her to her feet. Danny threw her arms about the barrable in a show of both relief and gratitude, while Jason slapped her shoulder plates in a congratulatory gesture. An immense feeling of satisfaction rushed through Saba. So strong was it, in fact, that for a moment she was afraid that her legs would fold beneath her.
Initial jump locked in,
the droid brain announced over the pounding of turbo lasers. Take us out of here, Jason said, as he turned away from Saba and Danny to return to his disabled TIE cockpit to oversee Bonecrusher's escape. Saba opened her mouth fully, sucking in a lungful of the sweetest air she had possibly ever tasted. Around Barosk, triumphant battle reports from Fleet Group Relentless were more than overshadowed by the terrible losses endured by Protector and Stalwart. For every battle group that came close to the Yamask-bearing vessel, identified by the Galactic Alliance, five more failed and were destroyed. It was a grueling, frustrating situation to watch, and Pelion couldn't help but wonder why this was the case. He continued to listen in from his back-to-tank on the ongoing battle,
Blue 3, keep up that covering fire. I'm going in.
Red 7, watch your tail.
I have a strong lead in Sector 14, White Leader.
On your right and above, Green 10, on your right. I'm hit. Stabilizer's failing. Going to...
Then, silence, as another life fell to the alien's plasma fire. Listening to the babble on the open channel was doing little to ease Pelion's mind, but he maintained his vigil because it gave him a taste of the battle as a whole. Overall, his gut feeling was that they were losing ground. The persistence of the Yuuzhan Vong was quickly taking its toll on the morale of his soldiers, and that directly impacted upon their battle performance. He knew that if this wasn't turned around soon, it could cost them everything.
Maintain shielding trios as ordered,
one pilot barked.
Who are we kidding?
Another returned.
This is never going to work, and you know it.
Can it, Gray Four? We've got better things to do than listen to your whining.
The voice of Captain Yage replaced the ambience of battle. She had become his de facto aide-de-camp during the fight for Barosk, deflecting unwanted inquiries and making sure only important ones got through.
I have a report from Lieutenant Arbor, sir,
she reported crisply.
The GAM has been installed in Defiant and is ready for a test run.
Excellent.
Pelion felt a grim satisfaction rise in him. Imperial ships didn't carry gravitic amplitude modulators as standard issue. Indeed, such devices were rare and expensive. If all went well, and it jammed the Yuuzhan Vong war coordinator as Skywalker promised, it could prove to be the turning point in the battle.
Instruct Lieutenant Arbor to forego the test run and proceed directly to a combat run,
he ordered. He watched the Star Destroyer Defiant turn about and break from the defensive orbits the other capital vessels were maintaining below the ion mines. A swarm of TIE fighters and blast boats accompanied it, fending off Coral Skipper attacks and cutting a path through to the cluster of Yuuzhan Vong capital vessels that had been identified as containing a Yamask. As before, the Yuuzhan Vong clustered around the Yamask ship like insects protecting their queen, swarming en masse to deflect the attack and stinging the assailants wherever possible. Defiant was hammered by streams of plasma, bright enough to make the blazing of its ion engines look dim. It retaliated with fire from its turbolaser cannons, stuttering at the new frequencies as it removed entire flying groups of Coral Skippers out of the sky. Pelion admired Captain Essenton's skill and determination as she flew the Star Destroyer onward into the enemy's ranks. Defiant was like a giant poisoned dart plunging deep into the heart of the enemy. As soon as it was in range, Lieutenant Arbor activated the Yamask jammer. The effects were obvious and instantaneous. What had been a deadly dance suddenly became clumsy and uncoordinated. The myriad Coral Skippers, lacking central direction, were forced to rely on their own judgment. And Pelion knew well how poor that could be for a single fighter caught in the middle of a large battle. Without access to central command, the battle devolved into hundreds of tiny skirmishes. There were still flashes of order in places as the Yamask fought the jamming signals and briefly regained control of some of the battle groups under its influence. But through it all, the pointed hull of Defiant continued to stab, firing torpedoes and concussion missiles relentlessly, committing every spare fighter to a concentrated attack on the group of capital vessels protecting the central Yamask. The Yamask fought back as best it could. Even confused Coral Skippers found it hard to miss a target as large as a Star Destroyer. TIE fighters descended on the target ships, raining down energy upon them that no amount of Dovin Basals could absorb. But still, the Yamask fought, and the self-destruction of two of its sister vessels blew enough energy and matter across the battlefield to momentarily stall the Imperial attack. The shockwave swept space clean on all fronts, knocking TIE fighters out of control and overloading the targeting sensors of Defiant's turbolaser banks. Coral Skippers tumbled and flickered like hot ash over a bonfire. One TIE fighter pilot, who was quicker to recover than most,
managed to score a direct hit on the Yamask's life support tank, assigning the many-tentacled creature to the vacuum in a writhing ribbon of ice crystals. Pelion couldn't help but be pleased with the outcome. But the battle was far from over, and while the Defiant had been busy, a hole had been punched through the minefields that Right to Rule was only just beginning to clean up. Time. That's what it all came down to. Captain Essenton of the Defiant reported that they had located a second Yamask. She requested permission to target it, and Pelion gave it to her. Keeping the pressure on was the most important thing right now, even if it meant opening up the planetary defense to attack. And the more they destroyed, the better their chances were of success. He could feel that the battle was nearing a turning point of some kind. He just hoped it would be in their favor. Almost in response to his thoughts, Luke Skywalker's voice suddenly came over the receiver.
Admiral, I thought you might like to know that Bone Crusher is on its way back.
And the mission?
He asked the Jedi Master hopefully.
A success, I'm assuming. I spoke only briefly to Mara before they made the jump to hyperspace, but she seemed satisfied.
Pelion smiled.
In that case, I imagine we'll soon be hearing from our Yuuzhan Vong friends.
It would be a mistake to become overconfident right now, Admiral,
Skywalker cautioned.
The Yuuzhan Vong aren't inclined to retreat, even when the odds are against them.
They're not stupid either,
Pelion said.
If what you say is true, Shimra simply can't afford to commit to a long campaign here, and Vorak will know that.
Broadcast from the enemy, sir,
Captain Yage said.
Put it over an open comm,
Pelion said.
I want everyone to hear this.
We'll but delay the inevitable,
Vorak was saying, spitting out the words with even more than his usual bile.
There will be no mercy. None of you will be spared. Your homes will be razed, and your remains will be used as fertilizer for our crops. Your worlds will be absorbed into the glorious Yuuzhan Vong Empire as it engulfs the galaxy whole. You will!
Maybe I'm missing something, Vorak,
Pelion interrupted.
But I'm not seeing any evidence of this great plan of yours. We're destroying your Yamasks. We've killed your spies. We're taking back those you thought were captives. You don't have the muscle to take this planet, let alone the others. Your threats are as empty as your boasts are shallow.
You will eat those words when
empty,
Pelion repeated over the commander's renewed tirade.
We turn your abominations into slag and
empty.
Grind every trace of you into the dust from which you are born.
Empty, Vorak,
Pelion bellowed.
It's time for you to make good on your promises, Commander. Either destroy us, or get out.
By the gods of my people, Infidel, I promise that you will choke on those words.
Maybe one day, Vorak,
Pelion said.
But not today. You really should have thought twice about this gambit of yours, especially if you didn't have the resources to pull it off in the first place. We have no intentions of surrendering. Not now, not ever. You may win the occasional battle against us, Vorak, but the Empire will always strike back. That I promise you. You tell Shimra from me that if he wants to get the job done, then he's going to have to send a much bigger fleet and a more competent commander to oversee it.
He killed the line before Vorak had the opportunity to say anything further, then relaxed into the soothing embrace of the back-to-tank's fluids. He was happy with his handling of the Yuuzhan Vong commander, even if provoking Vorak was a calculated risk. Thankfully, though, within moments of breaking contact, half of Vorak's ships had begun to withdraw. The other half laid down a pattern of fire designed to deter the Imperial forces from taking advantage of the retreat. Then the capital ships were entering hyperspace, and the Yuuzhan Vong fleet was committed to withdrawal. The many views available through Pelion's breath mask showed Yuuzhan Vong vessels pouring out of the system in battle groups of various sizes. Pelion watched them go with a feeling of relief that he knew he shouldn't indulge. Even without seeing the data, he could tell that the retreating fleet was heading to more than one destination.
Where are they going?
He asked Yage.
Initial vectors suggest that 2/3 of the fleet is heading out of Imperial territory. And the remaining 1/3 are heading in the opposite direction,
Yage said.
We can't obtain a precise fix, but we think they might be heading for
Yaga Minor,
he finished for her.
It would appear so, sir,
Yage said.
He probably thinks he can get away with it while our forces are committed to mopping up here.
Pelion considered this for a moment before saying,
Have Stalwart press the attack. I'd like to keep their evacuation as undignified as possible. And I want Relentless and Protector on their way to Yaga Minor immediately. Defiant and Peerless, too. Flennig is going to need all the help he can to keep those shipyards safe. What about right to rule, sir?
It stays,
Pelion said.
I have other plans for the old boat.
Yes, sir.
When Yage had gone, Pelion opened a private channel with Luke Skywalker.
Well, Jedi, we did it.
Don't let your confidence over this one victory cloud your judgment, Admiral,
Luke said.
The Yuuzhan Vong will not take this defeat lightly. This is just the beginning, I assure you.
Pelion didn't need to be cautioned.
I think you're right, my friend,
he said, nodding in the back to tank.
The beginning of their end.
When Grand Admiral Pelion convened a brief meeting on the bridge of the Imperial Star Destroyer Right to Rule, 24 standard hours after the Battle of Borosk, all the surviving Moffs attended, along with those Navy admirals and senior officers not committed to the defense of the Empire from the retreating Yuuzhan Vong. Jason stood to one side with Luke, Mara, Saba, and Tekli, making their presence known but not contributing to the discussion. When everyone was seated, Pelion rose from his chair and stood before those assembled. The reason I have brought you all here is quite simple, he said, foregoing the formalities of introduction. I wish to share with you a realization I have come to, and to tell you what I intend to do about it. Gilad Pelion had donned his full battle uniform, and his general appearance had been cleaned up prior to the meeting, but there was no hiding either his age or the fact that he had recently been on the verge of death. In the last 48 standard hours, the Imperial Navy has fended off the greatest threat it has ever faced. He studied the Moths before him with penetrating eyes. You've seen the reports and studied the breakdowns, so I'm sure you can understand the significance of what happened at Bastion, and hopefully will have some appreciation of the seriousness of the decisions we must now make. He paused further for effect. Until we rebuild Bastion, the Empire is temporarily without a capital. The Moff Council has lost several of its most important members, and with them, I suspect, its short-term cohesion. Many of our citizens have been enslaved by the Yuuzhan Vong, and our borders are no longer safe. But the threat we have repelled is not the Yuuzhan Vong. It is something far more insidious. That threat can be summed up in one word. It is a word that has more fear for me than extinction. It is irrelevance. Jason caught a flicker of annoyance as it passed across the jowled face of Moff Flennig. For a moment, he thought Flennig might interrupt, but the Moff remained silent, brooding. Pelion put his palms down on the table and leaned forward. When we first heard about the Yuuzhan Vong, he said, we blithely observed their passage through the galaxy and assumed that when they didn't attack us, they did so out of caution. But when we sent support to the Battle of Ithor, we saw just how strong the enemy's fleets really were. Afraid that we would be unable to defend ourselves, we pulled in our heads and dug in, waiting for an attack that never came. And it never came because we simply didn't matter to the Yuuzhan Vong. We weren't considered a threat. We had demonstrated an unwillingness to become involved in someone else's fight, and a propensity for sitting back and watching our neighbors being destroyed. In effect, we made ourselves irrelevant. And for that,
I feel the greater shame of all. Well, Pelion went on, we've been attacked now. No one could have missed that. But does that mean we're relevant? He shook his head. No. It means that Supreme Overlord Shimra took a moment to stamp out a potential threat lingering around his rear lines. But we refused to roll over and be destroyed, even when we were grievously injured. We insulted the enemy as he retreated, and we liberated some of those taken captive. If Shimra didn't consider the Empire a threat before, he will now. How long he considers us a threat, however, is entirely up to us. And why is that? Moff Flennick asked, obviously unable to contain his disapproval of being lectured at any longer. Isn't that obvious, Kerlin? Ethan Ceretti said from across the table. If we sit here expecting to defend our territories indefinitely, we'll all be dead within months. Pelion nodded. And giving Vorik time to petition another strike force from Shimra, fresher, larger, and certainly more eager for our blood, would be suicide. We remain a threat only so long as we remain alive. Flennick inclined his head slightly. I can't help but feel apprehensive about the alternative you're about to propose. It's the only alternative that I can see, Pelion said softly, regarding each of the moths around the table before continuing. We must take the fight to the Yuuzhan Vong. A murmur of unrest immediately rippled around the room, but it was Moff Flennick again whose voice was heard. You would have us leave our worlds behind? He asked disbelievingly. Undefended? Not entirely, the Grand Admiral said. Every planet would retain a token defense force, at least enough to repel the sort of attack Yaga Minor suffered. But not enough to repel a serious invasion, came a woman's voice from the far end of the table. Jason recognized the woman as Moff Crowell from Valk 7, a system on the very edge of the unknown regions. If the Yuuzhan Vong are kept busy elsewhere, there won't be one, Ceretti pointed out. Can we be absolutely certain of that, though? Flennick countered hotly. Admiral, you are gambling with our very lives here. Isn't that what all leaders must do in times of war? He returned. I'm offering you a chance of victory as opposed to the certainty of our destruction. Mark my words. If we do nothing, we will be destroyed. If, as you say, we can't beat the Yuuzhan Vong here, Moff Crowell said, then how do you propose we beat them on their own territory? There is only one possible answer. The aging Grand Admiral took a moment to look around him. A staged moment of reflection, Jason knew, but effective. In order to survive intact, the Empire needs to see itself objectively. It needs to cultivate a certain distance from its immediate past and see itself in the context of the wider galaxy and its history. We are not alone here, as much as we might sometimes like to pretend we are. For too long have we kept to ourselves. For too long have we ignored what is going on out there in the wider galaxy. I do not exclude myself from this criticism either. There have been times I could have fought harder to do what my gut told me was right. That I didn't will be my undying shame because it was almost our undoing. But I will not let it happen again. You will not, Moff Flennick mocked. Grand Admiral, I trust we are coming to some sort of point here. If you have gathered us together to dictate your terms, then please get on with it so that we can vote on your dismissal and put this behind us forever. Pelion smiled. As Grand Admiral of the Imperial Navy, I am formally advising the Moff Council that at our earliest possible convenience, we must strike a formal agreement with the Galactic Federation of Free Alliances to share military resources in order to repel the threat of the Yuuzhan Vong from the galaxy. Flennick was the first to his feet.
Join the Galactic Alliance? Have you gone mad? You can't believe that any of us would ever agree to this.
I don't need your agreement, Curlin. Pelion spoke softly, but his voice carried over the howls of dissent. When I say that I am advising the Council, I am only following a formality. This is the way it will be, because this is the way it has to be. I am simply saving you the need to think it through for yourselves.
This is treason, another Moff gasped.
It's common sense, Effin Ceretti countered. The Grand Admiral nodded his thanks to Ceretti for the support the Moff was giving him. My loyalty to the Empire is as strong as it has ever been, he said. I will do what I must to ensure its survival.
By forcing us to submit to them?
A finger stabbed at where the robed Jedi stood off to one side.
We have spent our lives fighting this scum, and now you wish us to.
Be mindful of your words, Moff Freyborn, Pelion interjected firmly. These scum, as you call them, saved my life back at Bastion, as well as saving the Empire from an early grave.
A grave they dug for us in the first place, Flennick snarled. At our peak, we would never have fallen to the Yuuzhan Vong as they have. We would have sent them back from whence they came, impaled upon their own amphistaffs.
Do you really believe that, Curlin? We weren't able to resist a handful of rebels. So how would we have resisted the massed might of the Yuuzhan Vong? Our current circumstances are our own fault. It is foolish to lay blame elsewhere for our own failings.
The Empire will never surrender to the Galactic Alliance, Admiral, Flennick said firmly. And I cannot believe you would ever consider this after all your years resisting their insidious advance.
Instead of responding angrily, Pelion just chuckled. Like it or not, they have ruled the galaxy for almost as many decades as we did, and with less bloodshed and military expenditure, I might add. Right now, they are the one thing that stands between us and enslavement and death at the hands of the Yuuzhan Vong, and it is time we acknowledge that. And we need to do it now, before we bury ourselves beneath old grudges and an inability to accept reality.
I refuse to accept defeat, Flennick said, still on his feet and regarding Pelion with undisguised contempt. Why, on a day when we should be celebrating our victory, are we contemplating the end of the Empire?
First, Pelion said, allying ourselves with the Galactic Alliance isn't the same thing as dissolving the Empire. They're not asking us to surrender our sovereignty, nor will we. We will simply combine forces to our mutual benefit. Second, as I said earlier, the Empire exists today only because of luck. Luck that the Yuuzhan Vong didn't attack sooner, and luck that the emissaries from the Galactic Alliance came along when they did to show us how to fight effectively. Third, if we don't fight back now, the Yuuzhan Vong will return and strike us down without any mercy whatsoever. If we don't drive them back and join with our neighbors to keep them back, then no one will ever be safe again. And this empire we hold so precious will completely cease to be. If you can't accept that argument, Curlin, then you'll have to learn to accept your irrelevance to the Council instead. Flennick's eyes narrowed.
Are you threatening me?
Pelion's response was almost shocking in its bluntness.
Yes, Curlin, I am.
The Council will unanimously accept my proposal, or I will take the entire fleet with me when I leave. The shock of his pronouncement provoked gasps of astonishment and dismay among those who had, perhaps, thought that Pelion could be talked around, or at least placated with a slightly softer alternative. Jason felt a spike of animosity from Moff Flennick in the Force. At the same time, he saw the blaster come out of the fat man's robes.
This is treason of the worst kind, Admiral, Flennick said steadily.
Jason was about to use the Force to whisk the blaster from Flennick's hand when he felt Luke's hand touch his arm.
A dozen stormtroopers stationed at the exits rushed forward with their blasters, raised to shoot Flennick down, but Pelion waved them back.
"How strong are your convictions, Curlin?" he asked. "Are you prepared to die for them?"
"You can't threaten us, Admiral."
The Moff's voice was even and calm, but Jason noted that the blaster in his hand had begun to waver.
"We are the Council of Moffs. We appointed you. We can always appoint another Grand Admiral to take your place. One who won't lead us down such a treacherous path."
"Another warlord, choking on remembered glories, you mean? There aren't many left, Curlin. Our numbers have dwindled in futile attempts to reclaim something that was taken from us long ago. I, for one, am sick of fighting a war we can never win. And against the wrong enemy, what's more."
"This is madness,"
the Moff said, appealing now to the rest of the council.
"Are you all just going to stand by and let him destroy everything we've managed to salvage?"
"It's better than being dead, Curlin," Soretti said.
"Or enslaved," Moff Crowell added.
"No."
Flennick's gaze swept the faces before him, assessing the expressions and weighing up what support remained with him. Pelion watched patiently as he came to the only possible conclusion.
"No."
The Moff's certainty faltered and the blaster dropped. He seemed on the verge of capitulating when a dangerous look came to his eyes and his fingers around the blaster's grip tightened.
"No," he cried. "I will not submit."
The blaster came back up.
"He's going to do it," Jason realized. "He's going to shoot Pelion."
Ignoring the pressure of Luke's hand on his arm, he gathered the force around him in order to act. But he was too late. The blaster cracked.
At the same time as he felt the flex of someone else's invisible will, and he saw the gun fly out of Flennick's hand and clatter across the floor.
The blaster's bolt discharged harmlessly over Pelion's shoulder. The Grand Admiral hadn't even flinched. Two stormtroopers were at Flennick's side in an instant, each taking an arm as they arrested him. He struggled in vain against them, staring wildly at the Jedi standing beside Pelion.
"You!" he yelled. "You and your vile mind tricks have poisoned us!"
"Nonsense," Mara said, stepping forward. "We use our powers to save lives, not waste them. Unlike you, Moff Flennick." The dark tone to her voice made it clear who had saved Pelion.
"You are not the only one here who served under Palpatine," she continued. "I have changed, and so has the Grand Admiral. What were you thinking? That Yaga Minor would become capital now that Bastion has fallen? That you would lead the council? Don't be a fool, Flennick."
Flennick's glare at Mara was cold and piercing, but Jason could tell by the way he relaxed in the grip of the guards that her words were getting through.
"Stand down, Curlin," Pelion said quietly. "Stand down now and abide by the will of the council. And I swear that no action will be taken for what has happened here today."
Flennick's face twisted as he gathered his injured pride and anger and swallowed them both. The Moff looked from Pelion to Mara, then back again.
"Very well," he said quietly. "I give my support to your proposal of allying ourselves with the Galactic Alliance. But I stand by my opinion, Admiral."
"As it is yours to stand by," Pelion said, nodding sagely. "But hear this, Curlin. You have pulled a weapon on me this day. An act of treason that under normal circumstances would be punishable by death. But these are not normal circumstances. And so, I am prepared to overlook your insurrection. However, from this moment on, you would be wise to be mindful of your actions. Because if you so much as breathe in a manner that I think is treacherous, then I will have your head. Is that understood?"
Moff Flennick swallowed thickly, but didn't speak. He could only nod mutely. With a glance from the Grand Admiral, the stormtroopers released their grip on the Moff, Then Pelion returned to his place at the head of the table without another word. Mara crossed the room and collected the discarded blaster, then stepped over to Moff Flennick and handed him the weapon. He accepted it with some surprise, his brow creased in puzzlement. "Personally, Curlin," she said, "I prefer my allies to be armed." With that, she faced the Grand Admiral. "If it's all the same to you, Admiral, I think we should take our leave now," she said. The Grand Admiral acknowledged Mara with a curt bow. "Thank you," he said. Then, with a glance to the other Jedi standing there, added, "For everything." One by one, the Jedi filed from the room. Luke, Mara, Saba, Tekli, and Jason, leaving the Grand Admiral alone with the Moffs to go over the details of his plans. 2 days later, Luke watched from Jade Shadow's cockpit as the Imperial Navy reassembled for its mission Corward. Advanced scouts had found the location of Beshith Vorik's rear guard, and Pelion was keen to press home their advantage and push the Yuuzhan Vong back even farther.
"You'll require an escort on your mission into the unknown regions,"
Pelion said from the bridge of Right to Rule, his image displayed in miniature by the holoprojector between Luke and Mara. "We're quite capable of handling ourselves, Admiral," Mara said.
"Think of it as a gesture,"
Pelion replied.
"Captain Yage has volunteered the services of Widowmaker, and I have given approval. She's one of the best officers I have. She'll give you support if you need it, but she won't get in your way, I assure you. You can count on her to be discreet."
Luke knew that Yage was a good choice. She had proved herself to be very pragmatic and open-minded. "We don't really know what we're heading into," he said, "so we won't make a point of refusing the offer."
"You never know,"
Pelion said, smiling.
"You might even be glad you accepted it one day."
Luke smiled in return, then asked, "You have the information from Moff Crowell?"
"I have. We'll download it to your navicomputers in a second. She supervised numerous scouting missions into the unknown regions, some of which made contact with civilizations there. One of her ethnologists has an interest in comparative religions and has recorded a number of myths and legends prevalent among most cultures. One of the more interesting legends is that of a wandering planet known to appear in systems briefly and then flee when approached. Does this sound something like what you might be looking for?"
Descriptions of Sonama Sikat were non-existent beyond what Vergere had told Jason, but they knew without a doubt that it could move on its own volition, employing massive hyperspace engines mounted deep in its crust and powered by the planet's core. Luke doubted that there would be two such planets in the galaxy. "Can you tell us where it was last seen?" he asked. Pelion shook his head.
"All we have are the stories, I'm afraid. But I can tell you where the stories hail from. Since it's not a universal fable, you might at least be able to trace some sort of path."
"That might work," Mara said, glancing over the hologram to Luke.
"But what happens when you find it?"
the Grand Admiral asked.
"If the legends are right, it's only going to run away again."
"That's something we're just going to have to deal with when the time comes," Luke said. When Jade Shadow had recharged its weapons banks and Captain Yage had moved alongside to coordinate their departure, Luke took a walk to stretch his legs and to find Jason. Passing through the passenger bay, he found Tekli and Saba playing a dice game.
"Master Skywalker," Saba said, standing.
"Yes, Saba?"
"This one,"
she started, with something approximating embarrassment in the way her spiked heels scratched at Jade Shadow's metallic floor. Then, with quiet sincerity, she said,
"This one is glad that she came on the mission."
He smiled gently. "This one is glad you came too, Saba," he said. "Your stunt with the slave ship has done more for our reputation among the Imperials than anything I ever did."
"Crazy," Grand Admiral Pelion said.
"That we are." He touched Saba's shoulder and felt her thickly corded muscles tense beneath her scales. Consider them remembered, he said softly. She nodded.
And the hunt continues.
Tekli indicated for Saba to continue with the game. The Barbel crouched down again, her large clawed hand collecting the black dice and rolling them across the deck. Luke left them to it, glad that the unlikely pair had found friendship with each other. Once the door had closed on the passenger bay, Luke searched the immediate vicinity of the forts for some indication of where Jason might be. It was only as he rounded the corner to where the power couplings interfaced with the reactor outlets that he heard voices and realized that Jason was not alone. 3 paces later, he was confronted with a sight that brought him to a halt, more from embarrassment than anything else. Jason and Danny Quee were standing close together by an open hatchway. Danny's hand was lightly touching Jason's cheek, and she was saying something to him in a low voice. Luke quickly tried to duck back around the corner before he was noticed, but it was too late. Jason looked up, and Danny turned to follow his gaze. She hastily pulled her hand away as they stepped apart. For a few uncomfortable seconds, nobody spoke, and no one's eyes met. I'm sure Mara would have something appropriate to say at a moment like this, Luke ventured into the awkward silence. Jason nodded. Probably something about not being able to expect privacy on a starship, he said.
I'll leave you.
No, Danny said quickly.
Really, it's all right.
She brushed back her hair and, indicating the open hatch, smiled.
We can check out that dodgy surge arrestor another time, if you like.
Jason nodded once, then Danny stepped past Luke without another word, leaving the two men to talk.
I'm so sorry, Luke said when she had gone. I had no idea that...
No, it's okay, Jason cut in. Actually, you probably did me a favor. I'm not very good at this sort of thing.
Really?
Luke said.
You surprise me.
In fact, I'm pretty dreadful.
Well, I'm afraid you probably inherited that from your mother's side of the family, Luke said.
That includes me.
You seem to have done all right for yourself, Uncle.
Oh, better than all right, he said. But it took a lot of trial and error along the way. Getting a relationship to work is almost impossible, even without people like me getting in the way. Trust me when I say that it makes being a Jedi look easy.
Maybe that's why the Jedi of old never married and had children, Jason said.
Maybe. Glad that his nephew held no ill feelings for the intrusion, Luke clapped the young man on the back and led the way back to the cockpit. Mara looked up as they entered.
What kept you?
We just got talking, that's all, Luke said. His wife frowned at him, but then her eyes widened in realization. Mara studied Jason carefully as the young Jedi dropped into the navigator's seat behind her. If he noticed her scrutiny, he didn't acknowledge it. Instead, he kept his eyes on the view from the forward sensors, studying the ships arrayed around them.
An Imperial escort, he said with a chuckle. Who would have ever thought it possible?
These are indeed strange days, Luke said, slipping into the co-pilot's seat beside him. Widowmaker was visible as a solid icon, accompanied by several smaller shapes, gradually docking. Pelion had been true to his word, and then some. They were getting not only the frigate, but a squadron of TIE fighters as well.
We're ready when you are, Mara said, then turned to him.
R2 has laid in a course for a planet called Yashavu. Luke's much-traveled R2 unit whistled confirmation from the droid station behind them.
Widowmaker is at your command,
Captain Yage said, when the frigate's hyperdrive engines had cycled through a routine warm-up sequence.
Course laid in, all systems green. Just say the word, Mara.
Mara glanced at Luke, who nodded. She relayed the command, and Luke settled back into the co-pilot's seat, not needing to do anything with her and R2-D2 at the controls. The stars ahead were bright and too numerous to count. Somewhere within their far-flung tangle was a single world that might be the key to ending the war with the Yuuzhan Vong.
We're going to find you, Sonama Seacott,
he thought to himself. Wherever you are, we're going to find you. Engines surged, and the stars stretched into lines as hyperspace enfolded them. They were on their way again. This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Force Heretic 1, Remnant, by Sean Williams and Shane Dix. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Laura Wilson. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Force Heretic 1, Remnant, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2003. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2003, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.